Blog Talk Radio.
This is Scott Middleton, host of I Love 80s Wrestling Podcast. When I want to listen to a podcast, I listen to Debashi's Radio Takedown. He talks about sports and entertainment. So go do what I do. Listen to Debashi's Radio Takedown. You can find it here on Blog Talk Radio or iTunes.
Welcome to I Love 80s Wrestling Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Middleton, and this is Remembering the AWA in the 80s Part 2. And for the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking about the AWA, how it was good, how it was bad, and all that. And my host, my co-host, is with me today again, Nick. How you doing, Nick?
What's up, Scott?
Hey, so yesterday, we talked a little bit how bad the AWA was back then in the 80s. Now, let's just give a little of how good it was. Now, what was your good memories about the AWA, Nick?
Really, the only good memories I have that I've seen was basically down to two matches. There was the Kurt Hennig versus Nick Bockwinkel match that went almost an hour on ESPN. Then there was Lawler and Kerry Von Erich. Other than that, I can't. The Rockers and winning the titles from Rose and Summers. Other than that, yeah. There really wasn't a whole lot of good stuff in the AWA during that time.
Yeah, those three were really great matches. Now, another one that was, a lot of people might forget about the match. It wasn't really, a lot of people didn't think it was that good, but I thought it was kind of good. It was a few of the matches that Jerry Blackwell and Bruiser Brody had, that they were two big men, and they just kind of tore into each other. What did you think, Nick?
Oh, I thought those matches were okay. Certainly not Brody's best work, but it served its purpose for the AWA. Vern was trying to do something a little different at the time, and he brought in Bruiser Brody, who was a big badass in pretty much every territory he worked. But I would consider Brody's run in the AWA pretty much a flop because they didn't do much with him. I mean, he was just this lapdog for, I think it was Adnan Al-Casey, and that was about it. I think he had a cage match against Greg Gagne at Wrestle Rock, which is a whole other different subject.
Okay, now, if you want to call in and give us your opinion of the AWA and your memories, the number to call is 646-668-8873, or you can email us at ilove80swrestling@gmail.com. Now, we're going to get on to the subject of WrestleRock, and me and you kind of talked about this last night and all that, and I completely forgot about that, and that was the WrestleRock Rumble, and that was just, I don't even know what Vern Gagne was thinking. How about you?
Every time I see that music video, it kind of makes me glad they went out of business, to be honest with you. It's like, if you're going to willingly put on crap like that, you kind of deserve to go out of business.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just horrible.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of how Vince McMahon did his whole wrestling album and all that, and it just kind of, it didn't set too well for me, at least as a fan in the 80s. It was like, these guys are wrestlers, not singers and all that, but the wrestler.
Well, except for Coco Beware, he could sing.
Yeah, that's it. And if you look at the card, the WrestleRock card, it was kind of, I don't know, it was all right, but it wasn't. I'd say a match that kind of gets lost in that whole WrestleRock thing, and that was the Fabulous Ones versus Barry Windham and Mike Rotundo. Do you remember that match at all?
I think I've seen it before. A lot of people don't remember that Windham and Rotundo went to the AWA. A lot of people just forget that, Barry Windham, they assume he was usually either WCW, NWA, or the WWE, and that's not true. They did have a small run in the AWA. It really didn't go anywhere. In fact, I believe Barry Windham actually left first, just like he did in the WWE, and left Rotunda there.
Yeah. Like, that card, the WrestleOut card, to me it kind of seemed like it's kind of just, you know, was just thrown together at a last-minute thing. What about you? Could you remember any other decent matches on WrestleRock?
At this point, to me, WrestleRock is kind of like a repressed memory. I'd rather not remember it.
Yeah. That's
like most of the AWA stuff from the 80s.
Yeah, like, that's pretty much how the, towards the very end of the 80s for AWA was, it's like you do not want to remember it and all that. But, like, the earlier, I'd say, like, from 85 on back, was a little bit better. Not real great, but not, you know, really, really, really bad. It was all right. Like, they had, I'd say, a good match from the 80s for the AWA in the early 80s was the East-West Connection versus the High Flyers. That match,
oh, that, I mean, that feud, that is one of the greatest feuds in the history of the company. I mean, those two teams just had great chemistry. In fact, I believe they wrestled each other on Phil Donahue's show one time.
Oh, yeah, I think I do remember that, too, that they did. And it just, to me, they, like you said, they clicked. They had great, they told a great story in there, in that ring and all that, and it was really great. And then I forget who the High Flyer, I think the High Flyers lost the tag team titles to the East-West Connection, didn't they?
Yeah, I believe they did trade the titles back and forth a couple times.
Okay. And then, you know, the Rib Warriors were brought in, and that's when it ushered in a completely different AWA, in the tag team scene at least. And but getting back to the singles one, I'd say Nick Bockwinkel was the complete, I mean, he was their champion. And, you know, and when you look out besides Larry Zbyszko and Curt Hennig, really, there was no one else you could really look at as an AWA world champion. How about you, Nick?
I'd have to totally agree. I mean, you had other people that held the belt during that time. I believe Vern won it one last time in the early 80s. Yeah, I mean, we touched on it in part one. Rick Martel was the world champion, and so was Stan Hansen, but neither one of them did anything for the company, especially Martel. I mean, I love Rick, but he was never world champion material. He was never going to be able to carry a belt like that. So it was just kind of a flop. I think it was a desperate attempt by Vern to try and, you know, create a new Hogan-type character, and he thought for some reason that would be Rick Martel, and it just never happened.
Yeah, and he'd be a great Japanese legend, Jumbo Tsuruta.
Yeah, Jumbo Tsuruta. And I believe, didn't Masa Saito also hold the AWA title in the early 90s? He beat Zbyszko for it, I think.
Yeah, he held just for like a month or two, and then Zbyszko won it back. And then I think it was like a month or two after Zbyszko won it, the AWA went out of business. So that just kind of shows you where, you know, how bad the AWA had gotten, that they just didn't, you know. And from what I could see, the matches from the 80s, that they weren't put together too well. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the booking was just horrible for the most part in that decade. I'd say from about 86 to when they closed, I think that's just when it completely went off the deep end. Kind of like TNA now.
Yeah. Completely, and, you know, TNA is a completely different subject. But anyway,
I mean, and the way they put the belt on Zbyszko the first time, it just kind of makes you scratch your head. I mean, the Battle Royal and everything, where it comes down to him and Tom Zenk. I mean, seriously?
Exactly.
They want people to buy Tom Zenk as a serious threat, the Z-Man.
Exactly. Yeah, it's true. And, you know, not getting out of the 80s, but a little bit in the 90s, that when a little story about Tom Zenk is that when he was in WCW and then Stan Hansen was in WCW, they put them together in a match. I don't know if you remember that. And, I mean, Stan Hansen just chopped the heck out of Tom Zenk a couple times. And then I guess in the backstories that he complained, Stan Hansen hit me too hard and all that, that he took liberties or whatever you want to call it. And it's like, quit crying. You're a wrestler. You know, that's your job. What did he say?
Well, I mean, if I'd have been there, I'd be like, okay, you've known Stan how long? He's been doing that his entire career. Ask Bruno.
Yeah.
I mean,
exactly.
That was the one thing Stan was known for. He hard weighed a lot of guys over the years. But, you know, it is what it is. And Zank complained about more than just Stan Hansen. He complained about a lot of people, from what I've read.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and with Tom Zank, I just never got the point. It's like, why was he even in the Battle Royal? It's like, get real. There's a lot better wrestlers that could have been in that Battle Royal, but wasn't. So, you know, that's just Vern Gagne's thinking. Now, if you want to call in and give us your memories of the AWA, the number is 646-668-8873, and give us your memories, or you could email us at ilove80swrestling@gmail.com, and I'll read it on the air for you. So, but, yeah, like, some of the big cards, so-called big cards that they had, what did you think? What was their best one, would you say?
Well, I guess the only one that is really watchable for me would be Super Clash 3. I mean, that's only because there's so many people on that show that I was a fan, that I'm still a fan of to this day. You know, guys like Mick Foley and Sergeant Slaughter, Von Erich, Lawler. I'm trying to think who else was on that card. The Guerreros were on that card. Michael Hayes.
Oh, yeah. Yep, that was a, you know, a decent card and all that. And now I want to get your opinion on this, because me and my friends have talked about this a lot. What was your opinion about the Nick Bockwinkel Hulk Hogan feud and Vern Gagne just not willing to put the title on Hulk Hogan? What's your opinion about that?
Well, we need to clarify something real quick. Vern actually did want to put the title on Hogan, but he also put a lot of demands on Hogan, and that's why Hogan refused to take the belt. The story was that Vern said he was going to put the belt on Hogan, but then Hogan had to give him like half of all of his money he made when he went over to Japan. And Hogan absolutely refused, which he was absolutely right to do.
Yeah. And I just think, he teased, you know, the crowds constantly about giving Hogan the title and then having Bockwinkel either get disqualified, counted out, or whatever. And it's like, you can only do that for so many times, or the fans are going to start getting tired of it. And
yeah, basically you can only have a dusty finish so many times, and the fans are eventually going to catch on.
Exactly. Now, I wanted to ask your opinion on this. Now, say if Dusty Rose and Dick Murdoch had stayed with the AWA and stayed with them throughout, say, the middle of the 80s, do you think that AWA would have at least had a better chance of surviving more into the 90s than they did?
No, I don't, because Dusty Rhodes, as great as he was with Dick Murdoch, they were one of the greatest tag teams ever. I mean, they were just so good together. But both of them, for Dick Murdoch and Dusty, their strengths were apart, especially Dusty. He would have never been able to be the American Dream that way. He'd have just been, you know, the same dirty, dusty roads, and eventually that would have gotten stale. It's kind of like what happened with the Blackjacks and a few other teams of that era, where you stick around too long, and eventually people just get tired of you. I mean, they weren't the Road Warriors or the Rock and Roll Express teams that could get away with doing the same thing for decades, and the fans still want to see it. I don't think the Texas Outlaws would have fit into that category at all.
Exactly. And now, I want your other opinion on this one. What if Ric Flair decided to stay with the AWA? Do you think he would have been able to make a big impact as he did, or would he just fell off like how so many other wrestlers from the AWA did?
I same thing with Dusty. I don't think he'd have made a big impact at all, because it took him going to the South and learning how to work that Southern style and meeting George Scott that gave him the Nature Boy gimmick and helped him create that persona and made Ric Flair what he is. If he'd have stayed in the AWA, he'd have just probably been a regular mid-card guy, you know, just Ric Flair, and that would have been it.
Yeah. Okay, and now, I don't know if you have ever gone on YouTube and all that. I've watched a few Vern Gagne's matches back, you know, when he was younger. Actually, he was actually a good technical wrestler, kind of like how Dory Funk was and Moosehead and all that. And if wrestling hadn't changed as much as it did in the 80s, and if it stayed around the way that it was back in the 70s and 60s and 50s, do you think the AWA and Vern Gagne could have still been big?
I think they could have if it hadn't changed. But what's funny is, you know, the two people that really initiated that change, that got fans wanting to see something different, started in the AWA. Superstar Billy Graham and Dusty Rhodes, who we talked about previously.
Yeah.
You know, they were the ones that made people see that, you know, it didn't just have to be a lot of headlocks and wrist locks and guys with beer guts. You know, they made the fans want to see something different. If it stayed the way it was with just the mat wrestling and, you know, technical wrestling, I think the AWA definitely would have survived because they had the talent that could do that. They had guys like Brad Ringens and Greg Gagne was still there, you know, and Nick Bockwinkel. I mean, that would have carried them.
And, we were talking about all the stars that he had. The one star that I really liked from the AWA, and he went on to the WWF and made a big star of himself, and that was Ken Patera. Do you think Vern Gagne should have hit the world title on Ken Patera when he was there?
I don't think so. I mean, I like Ken Patera. He was a great wrestler, cool look, but to me, he falls in the same category as, say, a Rick Martel, where he's just not a guy that you could see that would be able to carry a world title the way people like Nick Bockwinkel did. He's just not that guy.
Yeah.
He was more
now,
like a workhorse.
Yeah. Now, like, we talked about their tag teams and all that. What tag team could you have seen gone into the AWA and basically blew up their tag team division besides the Road Warriors and the Midnight Rockers and Buddy Rose and Doug Summers?
One name that comes to mind would be the Hart Foundation. Because they could work with any style of tag team, and I think they could have gone to any territory and been just as successful because of their style. I mean, you had Jim Neidhart, the powerhouse crazy guy who was always entertaining, and then you had, you know, one of the greatest of all time, Bret Hart. I think they could have done real well in the AWA if they had gone there instead of going with Vince.
Yeah. And I think me personally, the really letdown of the AWA is that the change. Vern Gagne could not change. And, you know, we talked about this yesterday, that even Greg wanted to change, but Vern held his old beliefs, and that was what was actually the downfall of the AWA. And I believe personally, as a promoter, Vern Gagne wasn't that great of a promoter when it came to the 80s. He stuck to his old ways. This is going to work, this is going to work, but it never did. Now, if he changed, do you think the AWA could have been better in the 80s?
Oh, absolutely. If he'd started the change right when Vince started taking over the world and been able to keep talent without pissing them off so they leave, I think they definitely would have survived. I mean, that's why yesterday I pointed out that the AWA kind of reminds me of ECW in a way, because Vern, like Paul Heyman, just stuck to his guns the entire time, and that was the eventual downfall of the company, was that they refused to change.
Exactly. And, you know, I just, and a lot of people, like, nowadays fans, when you talk about the AWA, they're like, what was that? So in a way, that kind of makes me sad from being a fan from the 80s, because it's like the AWA early 80s, from like 80 to 85, They were a good territory. They weren't a great territory, but they were a good territory. And after that, they were a terrible one. But I think more people need to go back and watch some of the earlier AWA wrestling, like from 80 to 85. Do you think they should, or do you have
any other?
Absolutely.
You know, because they were riding high by time when the 80s came in. I mean, they were, if not the top territory, they were probably just maybe a half a step behind Vince Sr. But they had great talent. I mean, they had Vern, they had Bockwinkel, Ray Stevens, Pat Patterson, Billy Robinson. I mean, they had a whole plethora of great talent.
Oh, yeah.
Those matches are very fun to watch.
Definitely. And now, you know, they tried, I know they tried, we're going to talk about this, they tried that tag team challenge or that team challenge.
Oh, the team
series.
Challenge series. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What did you think of that?
Oh, my God, that was so bad. I remember seeing parts of it when ESPN Classic would show, a couple years ago, they would show AWA episodes on there. And that it was so bad. I mean, the talent they had in the challenge series, they had some good talent there. I mean, they had Sergeant Slaughter, who started the team challenge series as one of the team captains. Rashke was still there, Colonel DeBeers. You had Wayne Bloom and Mike Enos. I believe they were the Destruction Crew at the time. You had Larry Zbysko.
And
they had the
know.
Greatest legend of all time, Jake the Milkman Milliman.
Yeah, definitely. Now, I was going to ask, I wanted to get your feelings on this, that do you think, if Eric Bischoff was as savvy as he was with WCW back when he was part of the AWA, do you think he could have made the AWA go further or not?
I don't think so, because the one thing that ended up really putting them out of business was money, a lack of money. And the one thing that helped Bischoff in WCW was he basically had a bottomless, you know, checkbook. To where he could spend all the money he needed to get what he wanted done to happen. He wouldn't have been able to do that in the AWA, because by time Bischoff came into the AWA, financially they were on their last legs, and that's why they couldn't afford the good talent. So I don't think Bischoff would have been able to help if he'd have been put in charge.
Oh yeah, someone that wants to know about the AWA, would you suggest that they watch, like, the Spectacular AWA DVD? Do you think that gives a good mix of what the AWA was?
Yeah, I think it does. I enjoy it. I still watch it. To this day, I have the DVD, plus I watch it on the network once in a while.
Yeah.
I think it's a great tale of the entire history of the company. It, you know, explores the plethora of different talents they had, all the great matches and good rivalries. The only thing I would have liked to have seen is more focus on the Crusher, because he really was their top babyface for all those years.
Oh, yeah.
Even ahead of Vern, in my opinion.
But
other than that, I think it's a great DVD to watch, a great documentary, like most WWE documentaries are. They have a knack for putting out these great documentaries and telling great stories.
Oh, yeah. And the one person that we haven't talked about yet, and I kind of wanted to touch basis on it, and that's Mad Dog Vachon. What did you think of that crazy character?
I love him. I've seen a bunch of his matches. He was awesome in that ring. He was the precursor to people like Taz. I mean, he was just a badass in that ring, a guy you didn't want to mess with inside the ring or outside of the ring. If anyone's heard any of the stories from guys like Ricky Steamboat or Bockwinkel or even Roddy Piper, the late Roddy Piper, on his podcast, he would tell the funniest Mad Dog Vachon stories. And, I mean, he was just a great guy, one of the greatest of all time.
Yeah. And now, if you want to call in, we've got a few minutes left. If you want to call in and give us a real short, brief memory of the AWA, go ahead. The number is 646-668-8873, and just tell us what your memories are. But in a brief description of the AWA, what is your fondest memories?
My fondest memories is just going back and looking at some of the old footage and taking a look at some of the future legends and icons in the business that passed through that company in the 80s. I mean, you had guys like Mick Foley worked there a couple times. Shawn Michaels, you know, one of the icons of the business. His first breakout success with him and Marty was in the AWA. You had Diamond Dallas Page, who started there. Kurt Hennig was AWA champion. I mean, of course, the biggest one, Hulk Hogan. Hulkamania began in the AWA. And it just, it's amazing to go back and look at, you know, it's kind of like a before they were megastars type of thing, you know, to see where they came from.
Oh, yeah. And that's basically how I feel, too. And also, Vern Gagne, what I'll remember mostly is Vern Gagne just, he was stubborn. And even, like, Hogan and all them said that he was stubborn, and it's either you do it my way, or there's the road, you know. And unfortunately for some of the big stars like Hulk Hogan in that time, that, you know, it's either do it his way or go somewhere else. And, but like for Hogan and Ken DeCaro and all that, they had other options. I don't think Vern realized that there was other options where they could go and try to become a bigger star. I think he thought, oh, I'll let him go and they'll do nothing. You get that
impression. Yeah, he was one of the many promoters that didn't think Vince McMahon Jr. was going to succeed. Well, I mean, a lot of promoters thought that. They thought he was going to fall on his ass. And they didn't have the foresight to see Vince's vision for everything and that he had the know-how to get it done. He, you know, like Vern also had the eye for talent. There's no doubting that. But Vince had the better eye for talent, and he knew how to treat them correctly for the most part.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, if I'm going to ask you this, and this putting you on the spot, what would your super card be out of all the AWA talent? Like, give us your top three matches out of all the talent.
Well, I'd say I would definitely have you got to have Vern versus Billy Robinson. To me, that was Vern's best feud.
Yeah.
That he had much better chemistry with him than if anybody else, including Bockwinkel.
Yeah.
I think you'd have to have the Blackjacks versus the Road Warriors. I mean, that would just be, and it would have to be no DQ. That would be a badass bloody brawl. I'd have Zbyszko versus Bockwinkel. Then I'd have the High Flyers versus the Midnight Rockers. You know, battle of the two high flying teams.
Oh yeah.
I'm trying to think. Maybe one other match. I think that's all I can think of right now. Maybe Ray Stevens versus Kurt Hennig.
Oh, yeah, that'd definitely be... To me, that sounds like a great card, you know, that could have drew money, and, you know, I think it would have. And I just, you know, like, is there anything else you could think that you want the fans to take away from this episode?
Well... You know, a lot of people can kind of thumb their nose at the AWA because of the 80s stuff. They don't realize how big the AWA was at one point. You know, Vern, he was a trendsetter in the business. He was, him and Wally Carbo, they were the first ones to break away from the NWA. If they hadn't done that, I don't believe Vince McMahon Sr. would have broken away. They set the trend for that. They were the first ones to challenge the NWA's dominance, and they did it very well. Vern and the AWA drew a whole lot of money. Vern had a great eye for talent. He knew which talents would get over, which ones wouldn't. I mean, he started off a lot of people in the business, guys that made a lot of money, guys like Ric Flair, Ricky Steamboat, the Nasty Boys, Vader, Sergeant Slaughter, the Iron Sheik. I mean, a whole plethora of different great talents. But his downfall ended up being that he wanted to stay traditional. He didn't really see that change coming, the demand for a different type of athlete, and that ended up being the downfall.
Well, I want to thank you, Nick, for joining us, and hopefully we can do this again and down the road. So we're out of time now, so I just want to say thank you for all the fans that have listen to us live and all that. So until next month, we'll talk to you later on about wrestling.
Yep, see y'all later.
Yeah.
This is Scott Middleton, host of I Love 80s Wrestling Podcast. When I want to listen to a podcast, I listen to Debashi's Radio Takedown. He talks about sports and entertainment. So go do what I do. Listen to Debashi's Radio Takedown. You can find it here on Blog Talk Radio or iTunes.